right. Let's get this show started. In fact, we were already starting the show and thought, well, we should probably turn the microphones on. We have so much to talk about with our guest that Alicia and I are just jumping in. But first, let's all start together. Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. We have what I know will be a fascinating and thought-provoking show today. It is all about creating something you may not have heard about, a holistic estate plan, sharing your values and legacy beyond all the typical legal and financial forms that many of us know very well. But I'm so excited to learn what a holistic or integrative estate plan is. We are super lucky. We have attorney and author Kim Wright with us to share her experiences and expertise. She has been a best friend of mine for exactly 5 minutes. And I just learned that Kim is actually the legal correspondent for one of our other shows, the Home Power Hour.
Home Power Hour on Wednesdays at 10 a.m.
At 10 a.m. So this is not her first rodeo at the awesome WCOM studio. I am so excited for the show. I'm so excited for what we're going to learn together. But as always, before we dive into our show, we need to give a shout out, and we want to, and we enjoy giving a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday from 2 to 3 on 103.5 FM if you are in probably a 1 mile radius, or you can stream us live through WCOMFM.org. Alicia, there were some lovely people that I met on the sidewalk looking at our sign just a few minutes ago, and they said they were going to stream and listen in. So, Meredith and Jean, my new friends, hope you're listening in. And Meredith's a physical therapist and is going to come on a show and do movement work.
See how a community does.
I mean, gosh.
That's what you call live community.
So excited. So, yes, you can, however you are listening to us, whether it's on 103.5 FM or WCOMFM.org, or as many folks know, the Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors, they are expert guests on our show. Each week, the team goes ahead and posts our previous shows. Ooh, I'm spitting a little bit. Sorry, I'm making very good enunciation. They post our previous shows on the Orange County website. So if you want to catch up on any of our past shows, today is show number 67. So you can go to the website either to find the Aging Well Together show recordings/podcasts, or you can go on the website to find a host of other helpful resources around aging in the Orange County area. So the Orange County Department on Aging website is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. Again, orangecountync.gov/aging. You got to put that NC or you're going to end up in Orange County, California, California or Orange County, Florida. If you have any questions about local resources, you can also call the Orange County Department on Aging, and their number is 919-968-2070. I always need to slow down when I do that because I know people just listen to our show with their pen in hand and their paper just ready for something brilliant that we're going to share. So again, that's 919-968-2070. If you have any question about our shows or want to suggest a topic or a person or an organization to highlight, look, we just had a topic suggested 10 minutes ago right on our sidewalk. Please feel free to email me at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. All one word, I like to repeat, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, or you can call the Orange County Department on Aging, and they have a link also to our, I think, a show email. Anyway, happy to get your suggestions. They are coming in all the time. We are booked up through March.
I saw it.
I know. That's why I emailed the team at the Orange County Department on Aging yesterday, about 10 folks there, and I said, hey, this is your show, and a lot of our shows are getting booked up, so you let me know if you want to have come on and do a show like we did in September. All of our shows were about falls prevention.
Right.
In November is Family Caregiver Month. June is Brain Health Month. April is Healthcare Decisions Month. We have driver's awareness stuff in December. So to our friends at Orange County Department on Aging, all the experts there, come on, tell us when you want to come back and we will schedule you in. All right, you heard just a quick moment of the wonderful Carrboro bass band, the Robert Bradford Quartet, their opening music. I'll give you more time at the end to listen to their original tune, Mayfly, which we really like. Thank you, Robert Bradford Quartet. And as always, thank you, Alicia, for being here, my wonderful co-host. Not only is she one of the extraordinary wellness instructors with the Orange County Department on Aging, she is a quintessential civic member here in the Orange County area. Kim, I'm scared about all the things you're going to, I'm excited about all the things you're going to share, but if you share anything that becomes a volunteer opportunity,
I'm there.
Alicia's going to be the person to do it. She just volunteers with everything.
I already thought of it. We'll talk.
And it'll be interesting. We had a show on 2 weeks ago, the Orange County Human Relations Commission, and towards the end of the show, Alicia was like, I was on that commission a few years ago. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing surprises me. So she either will volunteer or has already volunteered.
And all these personalities. You know, got to do something with all of them.
I know. And Alicia and Kim met recently at a WCOM event. And that's when they both reached out. And Kim was like, hey, I've got some interesting things to share. Mm-hmm. And I was like, come on the show. So I'm going to turn it over to Kim in just a moment. But as always, I should probably introduce myself. For those who don't know, I am Heather Altman. I am your host here for the Aging Well Together show next to my co-host, Alicia Reed. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their family members connect with resources in our community. I am a caregiver for older family members. Dad, if you are listening, I rushed over at midnight the other night. He had a bandage fall off his ear, so I was doing wound care at midnight. We were having a good time. I was like, what happened? And so I know the caregiving world well, and at 54, I'm focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. I am talking fast today because I am excited. Caffeinated. And Kim doesn't even know how excited I am for this topic. I want to turn it over to Kim. We have a great guest this week. I'm going to love on her for a second because that way she doesn't have to say all these things. I'll do it and then she'll give us all the depth about what this means. Kim Wright is not your typical lawyer. For more than 30 years, she has focused on holistic and integrative law, bringing a more humane and human approach to law. She is the author and editor of 3 books. I'm doing hand signals, though. We're a radio show by the American Bar Association and a contributor to a dozen other books. She is the co-founder of the Conscious Contracts Process, a relational approach that enhances and deepens relationships between partners. She was a pioneer in peacemaking approaches to divorce. Alicia and I have both been happily married for a long time. I was thinking about this last night. I was like, not that we want to get divorced, but good to know we've got a peacemaker if that direction happens for us. For 15 years, she was a global nomad, traveling around the world and weaving together a network of integrative lawyers. In 2023, she returned to North Carolina to settle down. Her law practice supports clients in aligning their legal documents with what matters most to them. I know she's also going to talk about being a digital nomad. Anyway, she has so much to tell us. I'm going to stop talking for her. Welcome, Kim.
Welcome. Thank you. Well, I have to say,
where's our sound machine?
I have the sound. Wait, hold on. Welcome, Kim.
Yay. Thank you.
It goes on a little long, the clap. This is Alicia and I have a good time, like, and this that was introduced last show because we spent a year wanting a sound machine, and so finally, last show. Oh, wait. I pressed the wrong one.
That's a bomb.
Wait, where's this? Okay, okay. We'll see, already it's broken.
I have got to have one.
Me too.
That was supposed to be the drum roll thing. Anyway.
That's nice.
Welcome, Kim.
Welcome.
Thank you. Well, so I think it's really appropriate. I just turned 67, and this is the 67th show.
Isn't that awesome?
Very auspicious.
Oh, wait.
I like that.
Well, that's a laughter. I don't know. I'm just pressing. That's wonderful.
That's wonderful.
No, I love that. We're very into numbers here.
So I guess I'll tell you what a digital nomad is first.
All right, tell us a digital nomad, and then my first question, I'll tell you, and then you can weave in it. As always, before we get into everything else that you do professionally, tell us about you personally, whatever you want to share. And I know you have some cool, colorful stories about where are you from and your background and what brought you into the world of holistic estate planning and law. But yeah, tell us what a digital nomad is and then tell us all about you.
So when I became a digital nomad, there wasn't a term for it. And so
I literally have no idea what that is.
Some people called us professional hobos. Some called us high-end homeless. But I was practicing law, actually, over in Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of the leaders of a movement of lawyers of integrative and holistic law around the world. And I kept going to conferences. So in 2007, I went to 15 conferences.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's kind of hard to go
That's
to 15
expensive.
Conferences and also maintain a law practice
and
pay
house.
A mortgage, you know, yes. all that kind of stuff. So a sane person would have, like, given up the travel.
No.
I gave up the house.
Oh. Smart.
And so I closed my office and I closed, got rid of my house and became nomadic, and I thought I'd be gone for about 3 or 4 months, and I was good. When I would go to conferences, I would meet these really cool people, and the people who were not at the conferences weren't seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really hard to believe, but about that time, YouTube came along.
Okay, heard of it.
And fast internet came along, and so video was brand new on the internet.
Kind of.
You know, before you had
what
dial-up.
Year is this?
Right.
Is this 2007?
7 and 8.
Okay, yeah.
And so I actually literally walked into a Walmart and bought a cheap video camera when I was at a conference because there were just really cool people, and I wanted everybody to know them.
Yeah.
And I started videotaping. And I
you were the first legal influencer.
Wow.
Go on.
And so I put out video on YouTube, and I thought, you know, like, if I could let everybody hear these people, this would make a difference in how law is practiced. If people knew this was possible, that they didn't have to be jerks all the time, then it would change the profession. And everybody I met said, I thought I was alone. I thought I was the only one who was doing law this way.
Yeah.
And so I started knitting together these people. And so I got rid of my house and started traveling. And I, like I said, I thought it'd be 3 or 4 months. And then I kind of run out of people and settle down.
Mm-hmm.
Never 15 stopped. Years later.
You did it for 15 years. So did you have, like, I'm an RV owner. Did you have an RV? Or
I did
you,
not have
did
an
you go
RV.
From hotel to hotel? Like,
I
couch
had,
surfing?
I did. It was a lot of couch surfing. The first 2 years was in the was in the U.S. And I camped.
Wow.
And
you
I,
camped at the place with good internet service.
Well, I was in coffee shops a lot. And I actually went to 24 national parks.
Oh, my gosh. And so
if I had had a lot of money, because I'm not a rich lawyer. I didn't, like, have a nest egg or anything. I just, like, you know, I'm like.
Took it.
Because you were you able to practice law? And I don't want to get into your, like, you weren't making money. You were presenting and going around and
right.
meeting people.
I would do a little bit of coaching, a little
Got
bit
it.
Of speaking, you know.
Just piecing
just
it together.
Piecing it together. And I didn't have expenses.
Right.
Because you were camping.
I was camping and all that kind
except
of
except for all the conference expenses. But
well,
yeah, you do that, but then they feed you.
They would have me come as a guest, as a speaker.
Oh, and then they give you the housing or the free.
Sometimes.
Yeah, or just the free registration and then all the food. I like being a speaker at conferences for them.
And so at the beginning, I was in the U.S., and I put up the first 50 videos.
50 videos.
And
Now I feel bad I did not stalk you beforehand and watch the videos, but we'll do it afterwards. Okay, first 50 videos. We'll
and
find out soon.
Somebody
how to see
from, a woman whose name is Nikki Foster, was talking to the ABA, the American Bar Association, and said, you really ought to see what Kim is doing. And so I got a call, and, you know, it was like one of those calls I thought was a prank call.
Sure.
You know, like the American Bar Association is on the line.
Yeah, you're
and,
sure.
Can
I have your social security number and your mom's maiden name and I can help you with?
They want you to write a book. And what she said, the editor, her name was Erin, said to me that she knew, they knew law was going this way.
Yes.
But that they had no idea it had developed as much as it had, and would I write a book? And so in 2010, Lawyers as Peacemakers came out. And it was the story of the people I'd been meeting and about my journey. So it's sort of a little travel memoir and a little, you know, legal innovation. And
can people buy? It's funny. I was just
I'm actually editing the second edition right now. It's out of print, but it'll be back in about a month.
I am looking on. Funny, I was Peacemakers. I was just on Amazon. Look, Lawyers is, oh, there it is. You can still buy it on Amazon.
It must be used.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, look at that.
So,
yeah, oh, it's expensive.
The ABA charged like
$75. There's only one
bucks.
Left in stock. Look at this, $45, only one Ooh. Left in stock if someone wants to get that. Right. So, okay, but don't get it yet because it sounds like it's getting...
The update's coming out in just a little while. I've almost finished the edits and then we'll be bringing it out again.
And let us know. I have, I sound very funny. I have a number of friends and family members are attorneys.
Oh.
And so I would like to get the Lawyers as Peacemakers for my niece who just turned 30. Happy birthday, Taylor. I love you. Okay, so go on.
So I actually was kind of an unknown person. I was just like this weird lawyer, this weird homeless lawyer. And, you know, like some people were like, do you have a place to sleep tonight?
You say no, actually, or I'm camping, but I hate camping, so I would say no, let me come on.
You know, if I'd had more money.
Yes.
I would not have camped, and I would have missed a whole lot of sort of mm-hmm. spiritual nurturing.
Because of the alone time or because of the other people you met at the... Because I've done RV parks, and I meet a lot of people. Oh, nature scares me, but okay. So you... It's a whole other show. We're going to have multiple shows with you.
Anyway, so I became... I'm also doing hand gestures here because there's three of us. And
yeah, you know, we'll pretend we're a TV show.
So I... became
popular. Say
popular.
It. Say it.
Yeah.
Popular.
I mean, I became.
Well, because you were
a celebrity.
A known author.
I was an ABA best selling author.
And now, she just added best selling. I love that. And now there's so much noise on the online space. Mm-hmm. But back in 2010,
not as much noise.
Not as much. And
the
having.
First ones
the,
got through.
You were. Who knew it? At that point, you were closer to 57, that you'd be this hip influencer, this, you know, social media star. So you're a best-selling author of...
Lawyers as Peacemakers, Practicing
yes.
Holistic Problem-Solving Law.
Hmm.
And then within a few months, I started getting international invitations.
And that's when you started going overseas. So where did you go?
My first one was Australia.
Yes,
and then
nice.
South Africa.
Nice.
And then I went to Europe.
I was wondering if these were going to be English-speaking countries. So far, and then Europe. Do you speak another language? Is that going to be?
I do not speak another language. I actually wanted to study languages in my youth.
Yes.
Never quite got it.
There's still time for us. I was looking at a dementia funny video the other day, and learning a new language at any age is still helpful. So yeah, okay. So you get invited to other countries. What's interesting is that they were curious about U.S. law. I mean, I guess some of it's global, but right? Is there a lot of overlap?
So that was really the cool thing is that it really is a movement, and it's an international movement. This, you know, like integrative law is like integrative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, yeah, there's law, but there are people involved. And so you have a different perspective. You look at the relationships, you look at the people, the humanity of the situation.
Sure.
And you look at the context. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, healing. Law is a healing profession. Lawyers as peacemakers. Lawyers as problem solvers. Like this whole movement that seemed to be, like, I always like to describe it like popcorn. It's like the consciousness warmed things up, and then it started popping. And mm-hmm. so these people were like in Alabama and in Iowa and you know, like places that you wouldn't expect a lot of innovation. And they would suddenly wake up one day and say, I cannot do law the old way.
Mm.
And they thought they were alone and they were crazy. And most of their colleagues thought they were crazy.
Interesting.
And so I started knitting them together as a movement.
Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating about that is because especially when you talk about going abroad, I think of lawyers, attorneys as also they being the diplomacy, because mm-hmm. I'm stuck on the word peacemaking, and so bringing people together and helping find consensus mm-hmm. and common ground and a way to kind of move forward with the situation
mm-hmm.
because we normally think it's very adversarial, very turfy.
It's designed that way.
it is designed that. It is. That's why I never, all my friends, like so many of my friends went to law school. And I was like, I don't want to take a side. And that just seems too aggressive or too, I don't know. Right. Someone's not going to like you at the end of this. And I don't want to do anything where no one's going to like me. But, okay. So then you went abroad. And then what brought you back?
You know, there's a, in the movie Forrest Gump, he's running and running and running for like years. And one day he just stops in the middle of the desert and says, I'm going home.
I'm just done.
I'm just done. In 2022, I went to South Africa for 3 months.
Oh.
And they teach my work. I actually have a reader, an integrative law reader in South Africa that's taught at eight law schools. The University of Johannesburg is putting out a which is not one of the schools, is putting out a book on integrative law that I'm one of the, you know, authors. And, you know, it's like a really cool thing in South Africa. It's like, you know, I'm kind of famous in South Africa.
Oh, well, you are here too.
And so it wasn't like I failed, right?
No, you
like,
were doing great. You were just ready for the next part of your journey.
I just came home. But I had to figure out where home was.
Well, because we skipped to the end. We skipped over that first question, which is where are you from? Like where was your home? What, like, maybe this is a good time to take a step back.
So I have lived most of my adult life in North Carolina, but I grew up in Florida.
Okay.
I always say I left as soon as I could.
Okay.
So I came to Warren Wilson College in Asheville.
And, oh,
and when
great.
I was 17. And so went back in my first marriage. I'm one of those serial monogamous.
well, I thought we're going to get to your children at some point because there's a lot of them.
I had my first child in college, went back to Florida to be close to family. Mm-hmm. But then by the time he was five, I was ready to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came back and I ended up doing a lot of research about where I wanted to live in the world.
Yes.
And I mean, literally,
yeah.
You know,
you
in the
literally
world.
Had the world.
And, oh, this is before I traveled, but still.
Yes, but, okay, got it.
I thought, you know, I want to live in North Carolina. I actually lived in Hillsboro when I first came.
Oh, not too far from here, part of our Orange County. Hello, yep. Alicia's a Hillsboro person.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And then my daughter wanted to go to Chapel Hill High, so we lived in Carrboro.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, I wasn't practicing law yet because when I went to law school, I encountered what you were just describing. It's jerks.
Yeah, what is it, the Socratic method where it's like asking you questions and it's the intensity and weeding out of people and that fighting, debating.
So I'm one of those people that does a lot.
Oh, amazing.
Really?
Yeah,
no shock. Go
no
on.
Shock. Okay. So when I was in law school, I had seven kids at home at that point.
Okay. This is where the numbers are going to start. Seven kids at home.
And we were taking in other kids. And I was a guardian ad litem in the court system for kids going through divorce. I had my own taxi company. I married a man who had a taxi company, and I was running one company, and he was running another in another city. And so I was, you know, the manager.
That's right.
In our area?
No, that was in Florida.
Oh, okay, because I was like, wait, years ago. Okay, tangent. Years ago, I knew couples that did taxi companies in the area. I'm like, wait, have I known you in a weird way? Okay, sorry, go on.
So I was... you know, I was just busy, and I was making good grades.
Yeah.
And I started the ACLU chapter at the law school.
Of course
you did. An organization for parents at law school. So this guy came up to me, and he's with his buddies, you know, like this crowd of, young white men.
Okay.
Come up to me. I'm in my 30s at that point, and they say, we think you're doing too much.
Race aside, it's just a young man saying to a married mother, seven kids, who's working and also doing, says, you're doing too much.
I'm doing too much.
Young guy.
It took me 20 years to figure out he was in competition with me. I was just oblivious. I was oblivious that he was in competition. I just thought he was a jerk. What he said was, I have called the IRS and reported you because you have a cash business, and I think they ought to investigate you.
Oh, he was.
So that you would not, so I would not have enough time on my hands. Well, What he didn't know is because I had a cash business, I had gone and had all my taxes reviewed by a tax lawyer before.
And so you were, you're a law student, so you were doing everything on the up and up.
I was doing everything on the up and up. And so I was just mad. And I said, lawyers are jerks.
Wow.
And I don't want to be one. And so I went out and I ran a domestic violence program. Mm-hmm. Was executive director, raised more money than anybody ever had. Again, doing all my stuff.
Had you finished law school?
So you finished, but you just said,
I'm not going to practice.
I passed two bar exams because I wanted to show that I was rejecting law and law wasn't rejecting
me. Got it.
And so I was.
Wow.
I like that.
I did some work with Landmark Education. There was a guy at a course called Wisdom. He was from Chicago.
Okay, called Wisdom. Mm-hmm.
And his name was Forrest Baird. And he stood up and he started talking about that he was a lawyer. He was just introducing himself. And he believed in dignity. Mm-hmm. And he was a divorce lawyer who made sure that his clients were friends with their ex at the end of every divorce.
Nice.
Because he thought they had to raise their kids together.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And it was one of those moments, everything went from black and white to color. The birds sang and the butterflies came out. And
where's that music again?
Yeah. I don't even know how to do the music. Okay, I can't do it. Well, that's a scream. I don't know the things.
Well, some of that, too.
That's the wrong. But I think, because you realize.
Butterfly noises.
You let this one young man create the narrative for what attorneys could be. And it's amazing how powerful that narrative, and that you needed to find, interesting, another man, so it has nothing to do with gender, someone else to be that. We're all looking for those mentors or those things that inspire, but also there's a moral in this. You should talk about this with Afternoon Talk with Alicia. Don't let one person sort of mess up your thing. Okay, go on.
So I took the bar in North Carolina. Living in North Carolina, I hadn't passed this bar. Took the bar like a month or two later.
Okay.
And hung out my shingle, and I was like, da-da! I had a friend in Alamance County who said, come practice with me. And so I was practicing in Alamance County, living in Orange County.
Okay.
And driving 25 miles, and as I used to say, 25 miles in 25 years.
Yes.
Down the road. For several years, practicing, I went over to practice holistic law, but I discovered that the culture of law really was that jerky culture.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have
winner that, takes all, and yeah.
Yeah, culture. I did have a new possibility. And so I set out to create a holistic law practice in Alamance County, North Carolina.
Well, and so now I think is a good time to define that. What does that mean, holistic law?
So for me, it was like, granting dignity to everyone, being respectful, peacemaking. I did start doing divorces and with the long term in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I would have them create a vision, and this is related to the wills. I would have them create a vision for what they wanted in 5 years.
Oh, I love that. That's like this. I'm in the world of nonprofit and like strategic planning for groups, but you'd had couples do that.
I had couples do that.
Where 5 years from this divorce, where do you want it to be?
And nobody said they wanted the other person dead, even though they were really angry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had some really nasty situations happening in cases, but nobody said they wanted the other person dead in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we created things like one couple said they wanted to dance at their daughter's wedding.
Aww.
And the wedding was coming up like, 6 months out or whatever. So they wanted to have their divorce complete and then still like each other enough to dance.
Mm. I love that.
And there was a couple, this one, I actually have goosebumps because I wonder how this turned out because it's been a long time ago. But they said they wanted to be able to sit in the bleachers together. So that when their son, who was an athlete, scored a goal, he could look up and see both parents cheering him on and not have that, who do I look at? Am I going to make somebody mad?
Sure.
And so we created pictures, of what people wanted to create, and then we worked towards that. So it wasn't that people didn't get mad.
Mm-hmm.
They could get mad and they could express their anger, I worked with a lot of interdisciplinary teams, so people would have therapists that worked with us or accountants or, whatever we needed for advice. And so they would work it through.
Interesting.
And then come back together and you know, like once you get the emotional part handled, it
then
pretty much
is
just
all
a logistical.
The logistics. I remember after my husband and I first did a will over 20 years ago, and we were in such a good positive place, and we were with the attorney. I was sort of joking. We should do our divorce paperwork now. I was joking, but I was like, we're getting along so well, and we're so aligned with our goals. People should set that up before. I mean, I guess that would be what a prenup is. But I was like, you know, there was something about we're in such a positive place. Mm-hmm. How, if we ever weren't, let's remember how we feel now because we were making some decisions.
Exactly. Exactly. That's.
I love you, James. I'm not planning on us. You know. Okay.
That's part of the holistic way of doing it.
So, are there different forms when you practice integrative law or holistic law, and they come to you and say, "Kim, are you doing it now? Can people actually come to you now and you're doing it, or do you?"
Yeah.
Okay. And so, what's involved with that besides the 5-year plan? I love all that.
So it depends on
yes.
which thing I'm doing. When I started doing it, it was very common in family law because it's really easy to see the need for change in family law because of the kids.
Sure.
But there were people who were like doing criminal law, and they would have this awakening, like this system is not working and there's a better way to do it. Mm-hmm. And so those people did things like restorative justice.
Yeah.
And then there was the problem-solving court model that emerged. Mm-hmm. And then there were some academics that started studying what they called therapeutic jurisprudence, which was about could justice be therapeutic versus being
punitive.
Punitive.
Vengeance. Okay, there's so many fun big words there. Well, first of all, describe that whatever we think, and can it be?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So, for
example, what does that look like for our listeners who are like, those were a lot of big words,
yeah.
therapeutic,
yeah.
jurisprudence.
So, let me talk about
justice.
The drug court, which was the first therapeutic court.
Okay.
So, what the old way was somebody had a drug problem, they committed a crime, which eventually they would, they put them in jail, they got more drugs in jail, got, you know, more messed up, they couldn't get a job because now they had a record.
Yeah.
And then they came back into society and got back involved with drugs. The therapeutic courts started, and they would say, the real problem here is the drug problem. Why don't we put this person in treatment?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll hold this court case as sort of a...
If you drop out of treatment or if that doesn't work,
You know, it's like the incentive to keep going. Mm-hmm. And if you are... if you, you know, go into treatment, you're doing well, you come in and you report to the court. And one of the things that they know about drug and alcohol addiction is that there are often relapses. So they actually put a plan in place for a relapse.
Mm-hmm.
And so the judge becomes, I hate to even say it this way, because it...
Counselor?
Like a counselor or like a paternal...
Sure.
Kind of figure who's like cheering...
Yes.
Cheering you on.
Okay.
And so you come in and they literally applaud if you've done well that week.
Well, and I think it because it reframes what the point is. Is the point punishment or is the point getting people back out as productive members of civic society and
right.
helping them? And I guess it also depends on what the crime is.
Yeah, a lot of times it would be things like writing bad checks or, you know, things like that that were victimless crimes.
I was going to say victimless crimes. Or, yeah, okay.
But they've started doing it with more serious crimes, but that usually if it's a more serious crime, it's not a complete pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other ones it would be like
instead of jail.
Instead of jail. The... like they'd be in drug court for like 18 months. Sometimes that's longer than the sentence would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to keep coming and, you know, doing their like case management.
Okay.
They one of the things that's different about the therapeutic courts is that there's not this judge on a big high bench. The judge sits at the table and it's a case management meeting and you know, people will come in and, you know, report how, you know, from the case management team or whatever, how the person's doing, what they're struggling with, what they could use for some help. Maybe they need a referral to get a job or a graduation. And so it becomes like the people say it saves their lives.
Mm. So there's a part of me that, well, there's all of me that thinks, oh, that's so beautiful, there's wonderful. And then there's the part of me, I always have, I'm such a nice person, I try to be, but I always think about what would someone say who has like the flip opinion? Like, oh gosh, if I need that support, do I need to have a crime? Like if I have a drug problem and I can't get those kinds of supports, do I actually need to commit some sort of crime in order to get that, right? So there's this weird incentive.
Yeah, and just using the drugs is a crime.
Yes.
So what happened is
But if that, you're using drugs and no other, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah.
So what happened is that they started seeing other uses for these courts. So like people who were off their meds, literally, in mental health issues might, you know, like one of the cases that actually started it was a woman who went up to somebody at an ATM and tried to get their money.
Oy.
And she was just, you know, out yes. of her mind high. And she was somebody that when she was on her meds was a productive
member of society
and all that. And so they started a mental health court to help her get steady on her meds.
And so were these practices that then you were a part of, or were you thinking about it in terms of how does this go to, you know, I'm thinking about this focus of estate planning and integrative and holistic. So there's this whole movement. And was everyone starting to translate all of these different experiences?
See, if you're in criminal law, you go there. If you're a corporate lawyer, mm-hmm. you start looking at the way you draft contracts. And so
yes.
things like wills, you know, like doing wills is also something that can be very transactional or very relational.
Yes.
And so to transfer to the wills topic, I decided, you know, after I've been traveling, I think, okay, I'm mm-hmm. going to start a law practice. I'm going to start a law practice where I used to practice.
Start one again. Restart one. Yeah.
Restart mm-hmm. one. Third law practice I've ever had.
Okay.
And, or fourth maybe. I thought, okay, so I bet there's good software now.
I bet.
You know,
I'm already predicting where this is going to go, this story. Okay. You just assumed there was good software. Was there, Kim?
Well, I called one of those companies that says they do good software.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, oh, you're so exciting. He said, you don't even have to, you can meet for 15 minutes. The clients put in all the information. It spits it out. We've already written all the documents for you. And you can make $2,500 for one document that takes you 15 minutes.
Okay.
And I'm like, you definitely have the wrong number.
Yeah.
Because I actually want to work with the people.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like for me, it's a big deal to create what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all these relational things you got to think about. You know, how is this going to land if you've got four kids and then you're giving them four different things? How is this going to land with them? Do we need to have a family meeting
mm-hmm.
and actually talk about this, you know, and do some pre-mediation so that they don't go to court as soon as you die?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so all of those sorts of things. And so I started working on finding a place. Now, I did find a place. There's a woman in Mebane mm-hmm. who has a website called Guardian's Gift mm-hmm. and a software program that walks you through asking you all the questions.
Okay.
And so I worked with her some, and it's a great program. And I started seeing that what people had with wills
mm-hmm.
was like so some people are afraid to die.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to talk about it.
I love a lawyer told me once, an estate planning lawyer, and they said, they try not to talk about the death. They said, when it's time to execute your will. So not after you die. Not after you die, but when it's time to execute your will. Mm. But go on, yeah.
But then there's also the, hold on a second. I lost my train of thought.
I'm so sorry. You were talking about wills and how some people write their wills because they don't want to die.
There's also the adulting piece.
Like, which means in this case?
Like, I don't know who to ask.
No.
I don't know what I have. I mean, you'd be surprised at how many people, like, they don't have, like a bookkeeping system. As a nomad, mm-hmm. I had to create these systems for myself. You know, I had documents that had all of my account numbers and copies of my credit cards and everything. Because if I lost stuff on the road, you know, it had to be digital for me so I could, you know, recover.
Sure.
But there are people who don't have those things. And they say, well, you know, it's our second marriage and we've never actually discussed money.
Got it. So the adulting of the actual people themselves, not their adult children, but as they know they need to create documents, but they don't even know how to, or they can just create a document that says all my stuff goes to so-and-so and then so-and-so needs to figure out the stuff.
Yeah, and people who've got a lot of stuff in their house, you know, who are you going to ask to clean out your house if you've, you know, got a house full of stuff? And, and where's it going to go? And, you know, like, they're just things to think about.
Absolutely.
And so one of the things I do is I help people think through it.
Okay.
I'm actually teaching a course at Warren Wilson in May. They've got a Mountain Lifelong Learning Institute.
Sure.
That is about, like, breaking it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, okay. Except, so let's have less.
Breaking it down, all of it. Like, creating your estate plan, you mean? Like, or just the planning for end of life? What part of breaking it down?
Breaking it down, like, today we're going to talk about who in your life might help you with, like, being a trustee or an executor.
Really, all of these estate plan, breaking it down. Okay.
It's almost like baby steps.
Baby steps. You know, we're not going to make big decisions all at one time. Because a lot of people have consulted me and never came back.
It's just too much.
It's so,
not doing anything is a decision. Not doing anything is doing something. As someone says, like, that's when you look at different pathways of action, no action is a pathway in itself. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
So we just talk about, okay.
Baby steps.
Like I've kind of got it set up as lessons. And I explain to them, you know, like, this is a will and this is a trust. And this is why you might want one or both or, you know, whatever. And, you know, we're going to decide, you know, who you can ask. And we're going to have those conversations with people, you know, like people who don't have kids are, you know, like often.
Really, I work with people all the time because I do advanced care planning. I'm a notary. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm a notary. I help. Well, clearly, you're an attorney and you're wonderful. But when I talk about advanced care planning and who will speak for you if you cannot speak for yourself while you're still alive, but in the hospital, and it's hard for folks.
Yeah.
To think that.
If they don't have their circle and they're not sure who to turn to. So my reservation, though, and I've worked with attorneys, is it gets really expensive. And so the like my husband and I will go in and he'll be like, okay, don't talk so much because we're paying by the hour. And so that's an issue for me because I'm like, boop, 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 boop. And then that's another hundreds. Yeah.
So I don't charge by the hour.
That would make more sense.
That's interesting as for a lawyer. Yeah. Did you hear that? Did everybody hear that?
Yes.
I haven't charged by the hour for 20 years. Wow.
Yeah, paying by the hour does not work for me and my family.
That would make people a little more comfortable, at ease, willing to relax and give, you know, get with what's got to be done.
You know what you're getting involved with right from the get-go. And then, so then they fill out, you help them fill out forms. Are your documents and things?
I actually don't help them fill out forms. I help them have conversations.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, is it different what they leave? Well, of course, in that course you're teaching, that's different. That's not.
Yeah, we still need to know what they've got.
Yes.
But that might be 2 weeks of the sessions. You
got
know.
It.
I actually have been imagining that there might be somebody out there who wanted to take a whole year to work on it because they had that level of
wealth.
Well, not
no
complications.
Or I see people all the time take a long time to think through things because there's, as you said, like there's some of the forms, but there's literally like looking through the house and deciding what goes to what, thinking through the financial aspects and what goes to what, and setting the things up. I think actually a lot of us take a lot of people that I know and myself take a long time to think through things, and either they go to someone at the end after they thought about it or somewhere in the process. But a lot of these things,
but they don't have a roadmap. For what they need,
or they
to be
let the lawyers have the roadmap, and then you realize, yes, but did you discuss this?
And
or
then,
it's only about the stuff, not the emotionality.
And you need another year.
And I loved your part about your values in it, because a lot of the time it's like when I do the advanced care planning, I'm like, okay, now we're talking about your body, not your stuff. That's your durable power of attorney. That's your will and your trust. Right now we're talking about what happens with your body with serious illness and end of life. But I think a lot of people then just think about their stuff, but you have a whole part about your values and your legacy. What really, what are you passing on?
I want to have that conversation really early.
Yes.
You know, some people kind of need the roadmap laid out for them before they can even go beyond. But it's one of the first conversations. It's like, what is it that really is important to you?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what, you know, who are the people who are important to you?
Mm-hmm.
And the causes that are important to you? And, you know, let's look at that. And then the estate plan is in service of that.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's, and it's not just money.
Like I want to make, oh, I was going to say, I want to make sure my children or my grandchildren can have a good education, or I want to make sure that they, you know, like those kinds of things. Or if you have children with special needs, I know that gets, yeah. So there's like, what is your goal with all of this?
Right.
Yeah. Well,
what's your charitable goals?
Maybe your value is kindness.
Oh, that is mine. Actually,
How would your legacy of kindness be expressed in your estate?
Mm-hmm.
Do you give your things to the library or donate them to centers and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, like maybe like a. Usually at the end of every year, I look to see what I thought I should have done that year and didn't.
Oh, should-haves are terrible. You know, I don't like should-haves.
Me either.
Well, but like like last year, I didn't give money to the ACLU. I feel really bad about this year. I've already corrected that.
Okay.
But it's like you know, like if I thought I should have volunteered for something, I've been doing a lot of environmental work and sustainability, so then maybe, you know, like the stuff I do with children is not...
Things that are important to you, and then you realize, oh, for some reason I missed the mark on that, or I just, oops, okay.
And so, you know, the estate plan is your chance to show what's really important to you.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And so family is important to most people.
Yes.
But if your kids have enough, then maybe you want to look at something, you know, like giving in their names and honor or, you know.
I love that, yes.
Or something like that. And so we have those conversations, like absent any, like we haven't taken an inventory yet. We haven't said this goes to this place and this goes that place. We're just looking at, you know, what is it that you want to have as your legacy?
Well, and that's a good point, because also when people pass away, often they say, in lieu of flowers, please give to this. And even when my mom passed away, we decided what we thought she would like, but all these documents were put out in place, but that one little piece she actually hadn't specified, but we felt good about where we said to in lieu of flowers or if people want to make a donation. But even that's a good point to clarify, even for others, hey, if you want to honor me, this is how you can honor me.
Yeah, I noticed they do the tree, like in lieu of plant a tree
or do something.
May not have been what they wanted.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting. And I talked with a gentleman who did, and I don't remember the name of the, and it might be this, because you have the conscious contracts. And he said he did something. He said, I did a will, and it sounded like it was like a consciousness will, or it had a term to it.
Ethical will?
He did an ethical will. Thank you.
So that can be part of it as well. An ethical will is about actually, you know, like expressing what you value and your wishes for those values to continue. And especially, you know, I think about the divisive political times we're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of people who are going like, I don't want my money to go to do this thing or that thing.
So it's when this gentleman said that he had an ethical will, another person was with us and had some interesting thoughts about that and said, well, that's what you value.
Mm.
But, you know, that concept of will is also passing it on. And it's just because you value that. You know, we had an interesting discussion/debate is that almost in a weird way paternalistic of your family? Because say someone has values or legacy of, especially in this divisive climate, that are not in alignment, you know,
and you can see that in interesting ways.
That's part of being conscious about it.
Yes.
You know,
this was important to me, but, you know, if I leave money to my children and they know what I care about, but at the end of the day, it's going to be unless I literally have put it to that group, it's going to be their money. And if they have completely different values, mm-hmm. they may do it differently. So, yeah, do I? Well, yeah.
And maybe that's the opportunity to say, you know, give it to the grandchildren's education or something like that.
Yes.
You know, like that. That's part of the strategic planning. You know, it's not just a list of property and a names next to it.
Interesting. And so how are you now? So you're doing all these things. You are doing the practice again. You are updating the lawyers book. As peacemakers.
You have a place to live.
I have a house.
You have a house. Right. Are you back in Hillsborough?
No, I'm in Burlington.
Oh, that's right. You told me that also. Goodness, you said you had come from Burlington. So real quick, because I'm looking at some of the things I wanted to ask about, because we have a few minutes left. The conscious contracts, is that what we talked about, or is that something different? Because some things had names with big capitals, letters.
Conscious contracts is a relational approach to contracts that starts with a conversation about who you are and what you value mm-hmm. and why you want to do it with this person. And it includes, and so you each do that. And then you talk about things like your work styles and whether it's for like business partners and things, like whether the work styles are going to match.
So is it like a legit thing? Like, hey, go download, I mean like a findable thing, like, hey, I'm going to go look up a conscious contracts. It's a process.
It's a process that ends in a document.
Mm-hmm. And the document, is it called a conscious contract?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it really? Okay. You know, I wasn't sure. Yeah, okay, it's clear. I wasn't sure what was an approach or what was a, like, actual document. Like, you have a will, you have a trust, you have your healthcare power of attorney, you have your conscious contract.
And the contract also includes how are you going to resolve conflict, and that's one of the things I've taken into the wills.
I am so doing that this weekend. Happy early birthday to my husband, and I feel like I take any reason.
He's going to say no.
No, but, like, this seems like great dinner time conversation with your loved ones.
I don't know. Too much adult.
Does it not? I don't know. Well, you have to understand, like, my dinner conversations are all about serious illness, end of life,
I know,
senior living planning. So my cocktail parties and my dinners with my family, it's...
And Alicia's about wellness.
And wine.
No, well, wine will be had, but yes, yours is about getting more physically fit, right. But mine is about, hey, let's really talk about what's important. And look, we are all women of a certain age and older. We are making conscious decisions with mm-hmm. our lives, with mm-hmm. our relationships. And to me, this just seems like another form of intentionality.
Yep.
Okay.
It's part of the evolution of society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am pretty radical. I think I'm designing the next legal system.
Well,
I think that, yes. that we're leaving the old, oops, there's my hands. We're leaving it reluctantly. But it has to happen. It's evolving to something else, better.
I hope
because
it's better.
I like the ethical will because...
I like it too. Except
the conscious will.
There's a part of me that likes... Tell me if I'm understanding it. I like the ethical will, but I like the conscious contracts because it's about while I'm alive, this is what's mm-hmm. important and this is how I think we can connect together and work. Ethical will is... After I pass away, these are things I want you mm-hmm. to know.
And so the conscious will is a hybrid.
Oh.
Of the conscious contract is like, who are you and what's important to you and how do you like to do things? How do you want to resolve conflict? What's the best way to say all of this? If you go to consciouscontracts.com, there's actually a diagram.
I was going
to
say, yeah, because we only have a few minutes left. Let's start giving some resources out here. So if you go to
Consciouscontracts.com, we'll tell you about the conscious contracts. IntegrativeLawCenter.com mm-hmm. is my law practice.
Mm-hmm. Integrative.
And I do a lot of work online. I also have jkimwright.com, and that's sort of my overview.
And it's for those listeners, so we call her Kim, but there's an initial J first, so J.Kim.Wright.
No dots.
Okay, no dots, but it was more I'm separating out so it's the letter J, space Kim, space W-R-I-G-H-T, but they can find you at integrativelawcenter.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other resources you think, soon your book will be on Amazon, Don't Get Lawyers as Peacemakers Yet, because it's being updated.
Yeah, give me a month.
A month,
and then
it'll be back. Has to go in print. I'm thinking we need a few months.
No, I've got to do print on demand.
Oh.
I took it back from the ABA because they charge too much for it,
okay.
And so I also have give me another month, Lawyers as Changemakers, which is about the global movement. And so that's really like what's going on in the world.
We are definitely having, you tell us, you were really good about reaching out to me before. I need you to reach out to me when you have Lawyers as Changemakers and Lawyers as Peacemakers, because we'll have you back on the show. Because besides those two, and we only have 1 minute left, so issues that I want to talk to both of us about is, you do a lot of talking about the concept of courage. And I think we're doing a little teaser for our next show, because I think it will that fit in well with the peacemakers, the changemakers, and courage.
Yeah, my other book is on trauma. It's trauma-informed law. So that's another topic that I like.
Trauma. Okay, we have so much. All right, with your 1 minute left, gosh, what else? We have touched on so much, and I'm already so excited about our next show. I love shows that end with us all wanting more.
With a part two,
Kim,
to be continued.
What have you not shared in part one that you want to make sure to share? That was weird.
I think I want to say, since you mentioned kids.
Yes.
I ended up raising 16 children, or I had 16 children live with me, and of the kids came from the post office in Chapel Hill when I was living in Chapel Hill. The teen center is there now, but the kids used to hang out at the post office. So those kids came and lived with me, and they are my kids, and they're one of the reasons I came back to this area.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it's one of the things you had mentioned before. You had 7 children, but I knew in our emailing with each other that I thought there were 15. There are 16, and what are the youngest? Because you said
40.
Yeah, because you said they're all adults now.
Nice. Yeah. The youngest is 40. My youngest daughter is what I call a cosmic social worker.
Yes.
Her name is Annie, and she would just go out and find kids that were in trouble, and she would bring them home. And she was a good social worker who could screen them for sort of appropriateness.
Yeah, will they work well with the rest of the group? Well, clearly then the biologic children that you made, that genetic and nature nurture all filtered through then to her and to the others, that you opened up your home and your heart. And I've had a number of children biologically, but also 2 children, but we have we've had foster kids and exchange students, so that really warmed my heart. So I was going to have a whole other question about both of us have had opened up our homes to lots of children, so that thanks to you also.
Is that going to be continued?
That's a to be continued. All right, Kim Wright, thank you so much for joining us on the Aging Well Together show. Alicia, thank you for being here, but thank you for bringing Kim to us. A quick shout out to WCOM. Thank you as always for this time on the show, Orange County Department on Aging for sponsoring us. And listeners, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.